Hey guys, this is Sharad with Recently, bringing you another absolutely amazing guest on Recently podcast. Please join me in welcoming Jonathan Kadani on the podcast. Jonathan, welcome to the Recently podcast, man. How are you doing today?
Sharad, doing very well. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much for jumping on the call. For those of you watching it on YouTube, Jonathan has an absolutely amazing background. Yeah, it's real. Yeah, it looks amazing. Jonathan, tell us a little bit about yourself, man. Where are you joining in from? What do you do? And, you know, how long have you been doing that for?
Yeah, so joining in from Salt Lake City. That's where I currently live. I lived here for about 17 years, which is about half my life, almost to the year. I am a capital raiser, work in investor relations, kind of all things private equity, real estate, and kind of private equity as a whole. Done some other things outside of real estate as well. So that's kind of my main focus right now, investors, investor relation, and raising capital.
So yeah, explain me a little bit more, you know, what exactly, like, are you helping investors raise capital, or you work for a company that provides funding to, like, fix and flip investors?
Yeah, so actually more on the syndication side of things. So
okay.
Kitani Capital Group, I've raised capital for three different syndications, two real estate, one oil and gas. And then my W-2 job is investor relations, capital raising, basically glorified sales, if you will. And they're a real estate private equity company that does mobile home parks and basically parking garages. So
got it.
We
okay.
Raise money from retail investors.
And then these would be high net worth individual that you're reaching out to and raising money from them.
Correct.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. And then do the investors get to choose what project they're investing their money in? Or, like, you basically put it in a fund and then it goes to all these different projects?
Yeah. So Kitani Capital Group, I just built up a list of investors just kind of through mostly friends and family at this point. And just found deals that kind of fit what my investors were looking for. We got a bunch of investors who want to get involved in the short-term rental space. So I did a fund 2 years ago, well, about a year and a half ago, end of 2022, for this group called Techvestor. It's a big short-term rental portfolio. I believe there's about 75 short-term rentals in there. Big high-end, like real experience style short-term rentals. I've had some investors who want to get involved in energy. So I did an oil and gas fund. And then, and these are all single asset funds. So basically I raise money under a single entity, and then that entity invests just one big check into these particular deals. Then I also did a mobile home park for those who wanted some cash flow. And then my W-2 job, somewhat similar. But what we do is we do multi-asset funds. So you invest in the fund. It's called a blind fund. And essentially, we take the money that we raise and we go out and we buy. In this case, it's just been mobile home parks. But we do have another asset that we target as well. So kind of a multitude of things, different variation, kind of jack of all trades, master of none, if you will.
Yeah, man. No, this is absolutely amazing. I'm always very fascinated with investors who go a little bit non-traditional thing, if you know you can say that. I mean, typically you see a lot of investors doing wholesaling, fix and flip. So I'm very curious, like, how did you get started in it? Did you get started with this, or it kind of eventually led you to this path?
Yeah, great question. So I actually got started. I was a stockbroker for 3.5 years. That's how I discovered real estate. I worked with all of our high net worth clients at the time. And really my job was to just understand, you know, what kind of investor they were and what their outside investments were, ultimately trying to get them to, you know, aggregate as much as possible at the firm I was at. But obviously real estate, you know, can't be held at a publicly traded company. So, you know, started talking to clients, and I would have to talk to the same people, you know, pretty much weekly, some of them daily. And so, you know, you get to know them. And so I started to talk to a few who had big residential portfolios, like 20 plus residential portfolios, started listening to books and podcasts. tried my hand in the fix and flip game, the wholesale game. Ultimately, for me personally, and what I like, a little bit too transactional. So I discovered large multifamily, a little bit more economies of scale, things more favorable in the sense that it's a little bit more of a business as opposed to just an investment. Fast forward, I found out that you can invest passively in these deals and you don't even have to go out and buy the asset itself. Then I was able to discover that not only can you do that, but not everybody's good at raising money. Some people are very good at finding deals and they find the best deals, right? But they're not good at going out and asking investors for money because in the end, it's basically, you're a salesman at that point. And not everybody wants to take that role on, right? Not everybody wants to walk up and be like, ask for $25, $50, $100,000, even though they have a really great deal. So that's where I realized that there's an opportunity for someone like me who doesn't want to go out and buy, you know, 75 short-term rentals, or, you know, there's no way I'm going to go drill for oil and gas or buy a mobile home park. But all of these respective deals need capital. And I have a list of investors who are interested in these kind of things. And so you can make money sort of, you know, being the middleman, I guess, so to speak. And that's ultimately where I settled.
All right. So is it okay if we just kind of walk through an example?
Yeah, please.
Right. Yeah. I think this is really fascinating, man. So let's say if you are raising money, you come to me, let's say I'm on your list of one of the investors, reach out to me. Is there a minimum investment? Did you say 25?
Yeah, the first deal I did was 25. Now the deals are upward of 50 to 100. But yeah, okay. for the sake, 25. That's okay. Easy.
Yep. Yeah, so minimum investment, let's say $25,000. You say, hey, Sharad, we have this project going on where, you know, we need to raise money. Would you be interested investing 25? And I say, okay, Jonathan, tell me more. So first of all, do you have ownership in the project or you're raising on behalf of other investors?
Yeah, great question. So the way that syndications work, if you're familiar and your listeners are familiar, if not, I'll kind of explain it. Basically, a syndication is just a fancy word for pooling resources together for one big collective goal, right? I mean, syndications are everywhere. Movie syndications are another very popular place, right? Really, all it is in this case is we're just all pooling our money together. You think of, you know, buying 75 short-term rentals, right? That's going to cost, you know, tens of millions of dollars. Well, not all of us have that laying around. And so instead of, you know, having to go find someone who has $10 million laying around, you pull a bunch of smaller retail investors together. And ultimately, you can go out and you can buy, you know, short-term rentals, an apartment complex. It's probably the easier example. So for the sake of this, we'll use an apartment complex, right?
Perfect.
Here in Salt Lake City, the average unit price for downtown, if you wanted to buy downtown Salt Lake, $250,000 per unit, right? So if you wanted to go buy a 100-unit apartment complex, it's going to cost you $25 million. Again, we don't have that laying around.
Right.
So what you do is you get the group who wants to buy it. That's called the general partnership. They're the ones who are going to sign on the loan. They take on all of the risk, right? If anything goes wrong with the tenants, they're the ones that are liable, all of that. Then on the other side, you have the limited partners. They're limited because they typically don't have any kind of voting rights. They don't have any say in operations. But in exchange, they're not exposed to any risk, you know, and they don't have to take on any liability. And that's where I work, is in the limited partners. So I'll form an entity, right? Let's say you nod your head. You're like, yeah, this looks great. Yeah.
So let's just say for this example, we're buying $1 million asset and then it's minimum $100,000. So you need 10 people. So I come in for $100,000. Let's just walk through that. This is fast. Great, by the way, man. Thank you for breaking it down.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, so you invest $100,000. In exchange, what's going to happen is you're going to get a return, right? So you're going to get, so limited partners do have equity ownership in the deal. That is a big misconception, is that you don't actually own, but you do, right? All it is it's just broken up into a general partnership and a limited partnership. Both equal 100% ownership.
Okay.
Right?
What would like typical ownership, let's say you have 10 people, you have $1 million. Let's just walk through what would the ownership percentage look like?
Yeah. So typically, I mean, technically that would be broken up into 50%.
Okay.
Right. So it'd be like typically 50-50, somewhere in that range. But for the sake of this, the best way to look at it is like, you're right. If you're buying an apartment complex, what happens every month, right? The tenants pay rent. Well, right. That rent goes to cover all of the expenses, and then it goes to cover whatever debt is on the property, right? You know, we all use debt in some form or fashion when we're buying real estate, you know, and so it's no different here. Just like when you buy your house, you need a down payment, you need your closing costs, you know, maybe some money for renovations, right? If you're buying a fixer upper, exact same concept. So you're raising money to cover all of these costs. And in exchange, you're going to share the profits of whatever's left over after you've paid your expenses and your debt.
Okay, perfect. So in this case, typically the way it would work is, if I understand correctly, the limited partners, which is 10 people that put 100,000 each, will have 50% ownership in the asset. The other 50% would be between the general partners.
Yes, right. In terms of the ownership, the returns are broken up a little bit differently. But yeah, in terms of the ownership, the returns are broken up actually more favorable for the investors, which is why I like the limited partners side of things. For instance, if you know, you were to say, hey, you know, bring me this $1 million, right? So 10 of us join together, we all put $100,000, right? And that's what lets them. So now they're able to buy the property and they're like, we're going to split everything 50-50. I would be like, no. I would be like, at least 70-30, 70 to us, 30 to you guys. So you get a little bit more leverage and a little bit more stake because you're the one putting the money up, right? And that's an important distinction that people need to realize. When you're a capital partner, whether you're doing a fix and flip or you're buying an 100-unit apartment complex, as a capital partner, you've got a lot of leverage there and people, you know, need to learn how to use that correctly.
Okay. So can a limited partner also be a general partner, or it has to be separate people?
Yeah, they can. You can invest on both sides. It's fairly common. Typically, what you'll see, though, is you'll see like the general partners put up like, you know, so let's say we actually needed 1.5 to close, right? We bring the million as a limited partners. They put up the 500,000. And it's like, okay, that's their skin in the game.
Got it.
Where their payout comes, their payout comes at the end.
Okay.
They get big payouts at the end. They're incentivized to operate this thing effectively and ultimately sell it at a much higher price.
Right. So the profits would be split, let's just say 70-30, but the eventual exit would be 50-50, or is it still 70-30?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So not to get too in the weeds, but what you'll do is you'll essentially typically set a hurdle. So, okay, investors, we're going to split everything 70-30, 70 to you, 30 to us, until your return hits typically somewhere around like 16 to 18%. Let's just say 16%. It's kind of industry standard. Once you hit a 16% kind of what we call IRR, right? But easiest way to think about it is like average annual return. So let's say it took 5 years to get to this point. Once you reach a 16% average annual return, everything now is split 50-50 until all the profits are gone.
That's amazing, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then what is your role? So you're reaching out to the investors, helping raise money for this project. Then are you coming in as a general partner? Or are you coming in? Are you getting a percentage of like the revenue and the final exit?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So there's two ways. Well, there's kind of a couple things. One, these are considered private securities. So we are actually still, our oversight is the SEC, right? Everyone kind of thinks SEC is all public. They actually do have oversight in the public, or excuse me,
private.
In the private equity, what we call private placement world, just a technical term for private equity. And so when you're in the private sector, you can't be compensated directly for the capital raised unless you're actually licensed as like a public servant, right? You gotta have like your Series 7 and yada yada. So I won't go down that. Let's just assume we're not licensed because I'm not. So there's only two ways to get around that rule. legally, of course, is one, you become a general partner. If you're going to do that, you've got to be involved in everything relating to the deal, because again, you can't be compensated directly for raising money. So you've got to be involved in the due diligence. And then once the deal closes, you got to be involved in all of the operations, meaning your name has to show up in all the meeting minutes when you meet, whether it's weekly or quarterly or whatever it is. So some people do take that route and they do get involved. That is typically going to pay you more over the long run, but the trade-off is that you're involved in the deal. So you can figure if someone's going out and doing 6, 8, 10 of these a year, that's a lot of meetings to be involved in over the next 3, 5, 7 years. So the other way is you basically form what's called, basically you're just forming another LLC. It's got a technical name called a SPV, which stands for Special Purpose Vehicle. Really all it is you go out and you create an LLC. All of your investors invest in that LLC. That LLC writes one big check to the general partnership, to the deal. And then you are just the manager of that LLC. So you can see how your obligations reduce drastically, because I'm only overseeing me and these other 9 investors, right?
Okay.
And my only job is to just pass information back. And so, you know, let's say you're giving quarterly distributions. That means that you're giving quarterly updates. My job is just to make sure that my investors are getting those quarterly updates and that distributions are going out on time. When tax season rolls around, make sure we get the K-1s. So a lot more reduction in responsibility, because I don't have to be involved in all of these meetings and all of that. So that is the method that I prefer.
Yeah. And then in order for you to be part of the SPV, do you have to invest your own money, or could you just bring all the people in, or it's typically, you know, you're investing money?
I mean, technically, no, but it's like, why are you bringing a deal to your investors that you don't want to invest in yourself?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And B, you're going to be hard pressed to find investors that are going to invest in something that you're not also, because this would mean that you have zero skin in the game. You're not on the general partnership, so you're not taking on any liability, and somehow you're not investing even a single dollar, yet because you're the manager of the LLC, you still get a return. So ultimately, yes, I always invest right alongside my investors.
Okay. And then, so when someone is starting out, like you said, you're starting out with your friends and family, right? So you start out with that, and then you're putting a little bit of your own money. How do you kind of scale from there? Let's say like next 3 to 5 years, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's kind of in the stage that I'm in now. So it's a bit nuanced and kind of loaded in the sense that a lot has changed economically, right? It doesn't matter what you invest in, right? Whether you invest in treasuries or you invest in real estate, a lot has changed economically over the last year and a half. You know, obviously, elephant in the room, interest rates, right?
Yeah.
So what happened is not to get too into the weeds, but I would imagine a lot of fix and flippers ran into this. I actually have a lot in my network. I know this, right? You ended up with a lot of inventory sitting, right? Because you couldn't sell anymore because so many buyers got priced out of the market, right? Well, what does that mean? Well, hard money lenders don't really want to lend to you anymore because you're not exiting your deals, which is where they're typically getting the bulk of their pay. Well, the same is true in the commercial space and in the large syndication space is, you know, too many people bought too many deals with a lot of bad debt, and those debt terms are coming due and they weren't able to raise rents and a multitude of things. And so, you know, investors are on the hook because if the deal goes south and defaults and the lender takes it back, investors are the lowest on the pecking order, right? The debt's always going to be first. And then, you know, down the way are the investors. Well, if the asset is worth less than the debt owed, there's literally zero left over for investors. And so investors end up on the hook. And that's kind of one of the liabilities and why it's important to know who you're investing with. And so what I ran into is even though I wasn't buying any of the assets and I was the one operating, and I was going out and I was finding people who were really good at buying good deals and they knew what they were doing, because I didn't have this extensive track record of, you know, investing in all these other deals, and they had gone full cycle and all this kind of proof of concept, people got a little bit skeptical. So what I tell new people who are getting into the industry right now, especially those that want to raise capital, is A, make sure you're always investing alongside your investors. B, have already invested in some deals on your own that have gone full cycle. What that shows potential investors is that you know how to find not only good deals, but good operators, right? Because a full cycle deal means that it was bought, the business plan was implemented, and then sold, you know, at a gain.
Could it also be like a fix and flip deal, or would it have to be?
The same thing for fix and flip, 1,000%. If you're not out there fix and flipping and you're coming to me and you're like, hey, like, you know, I want to fix and flip, I would tell you, you better have a partner who's done 100 of these deals before. And that all you're doing is going out and helping them find money. Because if you're just trying to get into it and you're not putting your own skin in the game, you've never done it before, you never pulled out a sledgehammer and broken into the walls to see what's really behind it.
Yeah, then what are you bringing to the table?
1,000,000%.
Yeah.
That's absolutely everything.
Man. Absolutely. So in this case, like, you're finding the partners, you know, bringing the money in. How are you finding the deals? That's the other equation of this.
Yeah, so that is just through my network. So I've just been a part of masterminds, networking. I've got my own podcast. And, you know, everybody says they have great deals. And don't get me wrong, there are a lot of great deals out there. So it can be very challenging to choose which one you want to invest in.
Right.
Because there's not just 5 or 6 operators out there who are good in any one asset class. There's probably 15 or 20, and there may even be more that I don't even know. It really comes down to ultimately to your gut feeling, right? Like, have I met this person? Do I trust them? Right? That's a big thing for me. I invest with people I know very well in the industry because, you know I can trust. It's the same thing, you know, you develop a good relationship with a hard money lender, you know, they start tacking some points off because they know you're going to be able to get this deal done.
Right.
And, you know, they'd rather lend to someone who they know is going to get the deal done than to go out and charge, you know, 8 points up front and 15% and blah, 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 but have no idea if that deal is going to go all the way through. It's the same kind of concept. I'd rather invest with people that I know really well, that have a proven track record, that have done it before. And once you get to that point, it really starts to kind of decrease the list, and ultimately you get down to, you know, maybe 6 or 8 people that I really like what they're doing. I like the way they set up their returns, the way they take care of their investors, communication, so on and so forth.
That's great, man. Yeah, no, the reason I'm asking all these questions, I just bought my first multi-unit. I've been doing a lot of residential. Thank you, man. First multi-unit, 11 unit. We bought it right on MLS, but now with a partner, and I'm thinking of scaling. So these are all great information that you're sharing. So in this case, let's say if I came to you, I found another deal. Let's say in this case, I came to you, I say, hey, Jonathan, I have this amazing deal that I would love to buy. It's 2 million. I have $500,000. So then you could raise the other 1.5, and then we could set up an agreement where I would be general partner with some money in, and then your SPV would be the limited partner. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, yes, right. For the sake of this, yes. Something that small, I'd probably do more like a JV kind of thing where we're both, right? Because it gets really expensive to do syndications because you have to create PPMs, which is
for each project.
Yeah, private placement memorandum, which, you know, depending on what lawyer you use, can it cost anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 for the whole document? So you get all of these expenses, right? Some structures end up being a little bit easier. But for the sake of this, yes, that's exactly how it worked. And here's the thing. You've bought this 11 unit. It's your skin in the game. You operate this thing correctly. Now you want to go. The next step is, you know, do as many as you can with your own money or like with some close friends and partners. And then that's when you go out and you've got the proof of concept and the track record. to go raise money from outside investors, because you can be like, hey, look, Mr. Investor, here's all the things that I've done. Here's the returns I've generated so far. I'm literally doing the exact same thing in the exact same market, yeah. But it's just, you know, instead of 11 units, it's 111, and right. I can no longer afford to do with my own capital. Sense.
Makes sense, man. No, and this is, you're the first person I have to say who's like broken it down in so much detail. You know, you get all these fancy terms thrown around, syndication, this, that, but like when you think, it's just like group of people coming together towards a common goal. I think that's the best definition. I love that.
There's a lot of jargon that just has so many synonyms, and people want to dig deep. But here's the thing. When you're talking to people for the first time, do you want to use all the jargon and watch the gloss go over their eyes and have no idea what they're talking about? Or do you want to actually teach them for one day they might be an investor, right? I prefer the latter. So I would rather break it down in the simplest of terms and get people excited, because as soon as I start throwing out preferred returns and waterfalls and hurdles and, you know, syndication this and general partner that, people are like, you lost me, right?
Yeah. Oh, 100%, man. No, I think the way you explain it, absolutely amazing, man. Jonathan, thank you so much for this, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have next segment of our show. We're going to ask you a couple of questions about you.
Yeah, please.
Besides raising all this money, what do you do for fun?
Well, as much as I enjoy and do this, it is still a job. So, I'm a big outdoorsy guy. If you've ever been to Salt Lake, mountains are basically my backyard. So this time of year, we got probably about another month of ski season left, so I'll enjoy that. And then I like to camp and mountain bike in the summer.
Nice. Awesome, man. I've never been to Salt Lake City, Utah, or any part of Utah, but I've heard it's absolutely beautiful. So one of my list of places that I definitely want to visit. Cool. What's the one book that's had the biggest impact on your life? It could be personal, it could be business, or you could name one of each.
Ooh, that's a really good question. So one that was personal, I'll give one of each because I do like a lot of books. The personal one, The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F, the title is actually the whole F word, but I don't want to swear, but The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F, I read
kind of... Mark Mason?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. It's a good book.
Yeah. Such a great book. Really changed my perspective on a lot of things. Really helped me learn how to say no, which is truly a skill that, I still struggle to master. And then professionally, and also helped me personally, was Principles by Ray Dalio.
Okay. Yeah. Absolutely great books, man. All right. Last question.
Yeah.
If you could spend a day with anyone, dead or alive, who would you want to spend the day with and why?
Man, that's a really great question. I'm torn between two people.
Yeah, you can name
but
two.
I would say Napoleon Hill, just because of obviously his books have stood the test of time, you know, and Think and Grow Rich is another incredible one. But really, it would have to be Ray Dalio. I've been he's on my vision board to have him on my podcast one day. So it would for sure be Ray Dalio.
Yeah, dude, both absolutely great answers. Thank you. Jonathan, this has been absolutely incredible interview, man. Thank you so much. All right, if someone wants to connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been absolutely amazing. The best way, honestly, is social media. You can find me on all the platforms at Johnny Cattani, JonnyCattani. Shoot me a message. I'm most active on LinkedIn and Instagram. Shoot me a message. You want to chat more, break something down, something was confusing, whatever. I'm always happy to talk. And if you are in the fix and flip and wholesale game, listen, capital raising is capital raising. So happy to help however I can.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much, Jonathan. And we'll put those links in the show notes also for anyone just to access that. Great. Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you again so much, man.
Thanks so much for having me.